This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, April 18th of 2023. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Coming up on today's program, high school seniors and juniors will be celebrating prom nights over the coming weeks. We'll hear what BVSD and parent groups are doing to make the after parties safer. Lavish lifestyles of the wealthy use a lot of water, and according to a new study, they do so at the expense of the poor. That story and more on This Week in Water. And we'll go to our comment line to hear what's on the minds of listeners. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have an update from the BBC News headlines, then it's How on Earth. This week, the Science Show takes listeners to a Conference on World Affairs panel about energy technology that will power the world, including nuclear energy, and the audience reactions to those ideas. At 9 a.m. comes another archival recording of the wit and wisdom of Alan Watts. Then at 9:30, Terry Reardon will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead, but first, it's time for headlines with KGNU's John Kellen.
The parents of students at Denver's East High School are demanding that school officials enact new measures to protect their kids at school. During a public comment session at a school board meeting last night, one parent after another told the Denver School Board of Directors that the time to make changes in safety policy is now. The session was the first time parents had a chance to address board members since two East High administrators were shot by a student during a weapons pat-down last month. Both administrators survived, but the student later committed suicide. That incident came just weeks after 16-year-old student Luis Garcia was shot and killed just off campus. The two shootings prompted school officials to bring armed police officers back into the city's high schools, reversing a district-wide policy that removed so-called school resource officers. School Superintendent Dr. Alex Marrero said a comprehensive safety plan is in development. An early version will be made public on May 1st, with a final version expected at the end of June. Two former Clear Creek County Sheriff deputies charged in the death of a Boulder man may seek a change of venue in their trial. Andrew Buin and Kyle Gould appeared in court yesterday for the first time since a judge ruled against dismissing their case. Buin is charged with second-degree murder in the shooting death of 22-year-old Christian Glass nearly 1 year ago. Gould, who was not at the scene of the shooting but approved the use of force by on-site deputies, is charged with criminally negligent homicide and reckless endangerment. Glass had called 911 after his car got stuck in Silver Plume. After deputies arrived, he reportedly showed signs of mental distress and wouldn't get out of his car. Prosecutors say Buin broke into the car, tasered Glass, and then shot him 5 times, killing him. A 52-year-old man is facing 2 years of court-supervised probation following his conviction on a charge of threatening an elected official. KGNU's Alyssa Palazzo has the story.
Kirk Wirtz was convicted on felony charges last week and sentenced in a Denver court yesterday. Prosecutors said Wirtz called Colorado Secretary of State Jenna Griswold's office last summer and said the angel of death was coming for her in the name of Jesus Christ. Wirtz refused to tell a state trooper investigating the call whether he meant his threat. The trooper quoted Wirtz as saying he was an oath taker and an oath keeper, and that he didn't have to explain himself to investigators. Wirtz told the court he is not a member of the far-right Oath Keepers, and that calling himself an oath taker was a reference to when he registered for possible military service when he turned 18. At sentencing, the judge said he did not believe Wirtz really planned to hurt Griswold, but that the threat had to be taken seriously. As part of his probation, Wirtz is not allowed to own a firearm, according to the Associated Press. For KGNU, I'm Alyssa Palazzo.
The city of Denver has agreed to a $350,000 settlement in a lawsuit brought by a man who said police tackled and beat him when he protested a homeless encampment sweep. More than a dozen officers were named in the suit stemming from a July 2020 incident in Denver's Civic Center. City Council unanimously approved the settlement yesterday. The Douglas County School Board, meanwhile, has settled a discrimination lawsuit brought by a former school superintendent. The district paid former superintendent Corey Wise more than $830,000. In announcing the settlement yesterday, Wise's attorneys said the district subjected him to illegal termination and discrimination after he backed masks in school and advocated for students of color and students with disabilities. Wise told the Denver Post that there have to be consequences when politics enter public education. Suncor is temporarily shutting down one of its three Commerce City plants for what the company is calling planned preventative maintenance. They said the shutdown is part of a $100 million maintenance project that will reduce emissions and is expected to last until early June. I may also notice more noise and flares from its smokestacks. A joint study by CSU and the Colorado Immigrant Rights Coalition reports on mistreatment against immigrants by Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
A new study by the Colorado Immigrants Rights Coalition, or CIRC, and Colorado State University School of Social Work depicts the mistreatment immigrants have faced by ICE in Colorado. Researchers and advocates are now asking the state to end state and local collaborations with ICE through intergovernmental service agreements, or IGSAs, which permit immigrant detainees to be jailed for a daily fee. 17 people shared their past ICE encounters with researchers. There was an overwhelming depiction of ICE agents' behavior as aggressive and dehumanizing. CIRC's policy director said that in the past, Colorado legislators have stood behind the state's immigrant community and against the cruel treatment it has faced. She said that it is time for them to prove their commitment by passing State Bill HB 23-1100, which would end the IGSA contracts that rent jail space to ICE. CSU Professor Elizabeth Keene, who led the study, said the treatment by ICE is unnecessarily inhumane and traumatizing. For KGNU, I'm Steve Miller.
CU Boulder is joining with the City of Boulder and the Downtown Boulder Partnership to expand an ambassador program to the University Hill Commercial District. The program will feature full-time ambassadors working the Hill area throughout the year. Their responsibilities will include maintaining a clean environment and providing information like directions to people in the area. In today's weather outlook, mostly sunny and warm along the Front Range with a high of 76 degrees in Denver. In Boulder and Fort Collins, look for highs of 72 degrees, a little cooler up in Nederland where we expect a high temperature of 53 degrees. We're also looking at a breezy day today, and there's a high wind red flag warning through the region. For KGNU, I'm John Kellen.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. High school seniors are in the final stretch of the school year. For many, that means preparing to take finals or make last-minute scholarship applications. But for seniors and juniors alike, it means prom season. While the rite of passage party can be an exception to curfews and an excuse to splurge with friends, prom nights also tend to come with risky behavior that can even become life-threatening, especially when it comes to driving under the influence of alcohol. Joining me now are two guests, Boulder Valley School District Superintendent Rob Anderson and Mary Pierce, chairperson of the 2023 After Prom for Fairview and Boulder High. Thank you both for coming into the studio.
Thank you.
Dr. Anderson, first question is for you. How many after prom parties are planned for the coming weeks, and what kind of coordination is involved with the schools?
First of all, Shannon, thanks for having us here this morning. We're really excited about all of our after-prom activities that are worked really in coordination with parent groups at each of one of our comprehensive high schools. We've already had one event up in Nederland. That was last weekend. And over the course of the next month, we have events at all of our comprehensive high schools. We'll be talking a little bit about the Boulder-Fairview co-after-prom today. Broomfield has a just-after-midnight after-prom event, and Centaurus has the night after prom and Monarchs after prom. And so we're really excited and thankful for our parents and community for coming together to put on these really important events that are safe and fun for our kids.
Mary Pierce, the 2023 prom is the first since the start of the pandemic. How much of a lift was it to get the ball rolling again after a three-year hiatus?
Well, it was quite a large lift, I have to say. But we ended up getting a great team of parents together, and we're really excited to have it. But yeah, there was a lot of education around, like, teaching people what After Prom was about and what it meant, and fundraising for After Prom, and working with the school district and the high schools to get it going and all that type of stuff. But now we're geared up, ready to go.
So you mentioned fundraising. This is apart from the prom itself?
Yes, yes. After Prom is completely separate from Boulder Valley School District. We're our own 501c3 organization. So we raise all our own money separately. We've done that, I would say, about 95% through parents making donations, the other community and small business donations. So we're super appreciative to everybody that's made a donation. Our donations are still open on our website. So we're completely separate than, separate entity.
But what all goes into prom? Like you mentioned local businesses. I mean, is there going to be like food or what?
Yeah.
What's the party?
Yeah, it's great, great party. So we're really hoping to bring both the kids from the high schools in. We're hoping over 1,000 kids attend After Prom. So we got tons going on. It's the East Boulder Rec Center. So we have a large facility. We have a huge cafe full of tons of food. We got Cosmos Pizza, Katie's Barbecue, McDivitt Tacos, Dunkin' Donuts. We're going to have a fancy dessert bar, lots of different games, huge casino, tons of prizes. We've also this year, because we were starting everything over, it really was starting from the ground up. So we were able to kind of, which made it initially a lot of workload, but now it's really fun because we can kind of create what we want. So we instill these lounge here and have a really good time.
Dr. Anderson, why weren't there any After Prom parties last year?
Well, I think that, after the pandemic, I think that lots of things we had to start to get going again. We're excited that that our parent groups have been able to reorganize and to be able to hold these events at all of our high schools. I think, not only as superintendent, but as a dad who's got kids in high school, these events are really just a great opportunity for our community to come together, let our kids have a good time in a safe environment. And so we're really excited and thankful to Mary and the group from Boulder High and Fairview High for getting this back together, and just excited to partner with them and watch the kids have a lot of fun.
Now, I know that these events are coordinated separately from Boulder Valley School District, but I imagine there must be some sort of communication or support. What is the discussion around that?
Well, I think that these happen locally at each high school. This isn't something that's district directed, because local high schools are going to know what their kids want to do and what they would attend and, what are the things that that they would support. And so all of our high schools are coordinating with their parent organizations to be able to put these events on.
Now, these after parties, you don't have to go back very far to see why they're important. Last year, a Boulder High student driving under the influence of alcohol was involved in a car crash that killed two people on prom night of 2022. Not only did that student plead guilty to two counts of DUI vehicular homicide and one count of DUI vehicular assault, but five parents are also facing charges. Did last year's deadly after prom crash influence parents to bring back after prom parties?
Definitely, I would have to say for sure. I think they wanted to bring it back before the accident. It's just a rite of passage, and it's super fun. And before COVID, the kids really enjoyed it. So I think there was some motivation to bring it back. They weren't able to get it together last year. And then when the accident happened, it definitely spurred, woke a lot of people up and said, we really need to get this going this year. We use it, as a community safety thing and an education piece to educate our parents and students and what can happen. But overall, we wanted to bring it back either way. But having that important aspect come out of last year's accident just spurred our excitement to get it going.
Yeah. And Dr. Anderson, can you talk about the history of how these after prom parties started in the first place?
So I've only been here 5 years, so I can just speak to what I believe has happened. And I just believe, just like happened this year, just like Mary has coordinated, I think groups of parents got together and realized that after a prom or graduation, these big student events, it's really a great service to our kids and to our families to provide some structured opportunities for them to be in a very safe environment. And so I know that in other districts I've been in that this is a very similar kind of a theme. And so, again, just so appreciative of our parents and community stepping up, supporting. Want to thank the city of Boulder, who's donating the East Boulder Rec Center to our Boulder High and Fairview for after prom event. Want to thank the DA's office. Our DA, Michael Doherty, has been very supportive of this effort. And, you know, it takes a community coming together to wrap our arms around kids and just really excited for the events and the parties.
And as parents of teenagers, I can imagine that there's perhaps not an insignificant number of teens who may roll their eyes at the thought of attending a chaperoned after party. How much supervision? I mean, are kids going to feel like surveilled, or is it going to be, you know, fairly?
Well, I sure hope not.
Flexible.
I sure hope not. We've gone to great lengths to make it so the parents that are there, they're there working and helping. They're checking kids in. They're cleaning up messes. They're, you know, taking pictures. They're assisting some of our vendors. They're not there. You know, the rec center, we're using the entire rec center, the Agewell Center and the main gym, not the pool. So I don't even, if you're there volunteering, you're probably not even going to run into your kid. I think you're stationed at your post, and that's not our purpose. We're just there to keep the kids going, give them a place to go and have fun and hang out with their friends and get them home safely.
Get them home safely. There are going to be part of the volunteering opportunities is also to be as after party Uber drivers.
Yes, you can be a parent Uber driver. we just want to make sure that every kid has a ride home, and not every kid can afford Uber. And Uber, you know, double charges on the big nights, and sometimes a long time hard to get an Uber on a busy night. So we've instilled a parent Uber system. We also partnered with CU on their Easy Ride, so we have CU students in their ride program coming helping us out. We do need some more volunteers in that area, and we'd love to have them, but it's really just it's like doing a carpool, giving the kid and their friend a ride home to their house. And that's new this year. There was no transportation program prior to, so we're happy about that. We hope it works out for everyone. it's very important to us, the safety aspect of it, obviously.
Okay. My guests today have been Boulder Valley School District Superintendent Rob Anderson and Mary Pierce, chairperson of the 2023 After Prom for Fairview and Boulder High. Thank you both for stopping by.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Shannon.
Time now for This Week in Water with Jamie Sudler and Franny Halperin.
How penguins dump on climate change. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
The federal government has proposed steps to address low water levels on the Colorado River. Last summer, the Bureau of Reclamation said usage would need to be cut by as much as 30%.
Last week, the agency came up with two alternative plans to cut allocations. One would result in prioritizing the older legal rights of farmers in California, and the other would sacrifice those rights to the needs of cities, particularly in Arizona.
Favoring urban needs in Arizona would hurt farmers in Southern California, who produce much of the nation's fruits and vegetables. On the other hand, honoring those historic rights in California could result in Arizona having to curtail much of its Colorado River allocation that delivers water to Phoenix, Tucson, and farmers.
Negotiations among the states are said to be making progress, and there's growing confidence a deal could be reached that respects older legal rights and doesn't cut off cities or those with junior allocations.
The Fed's plans, which don't currently affect the upper basin states of Colorado, Wyoming, Utah, and New Mexico, are now subject to public comment. A decision could come this summer.
Last week, Fort Lauderdale suffered a rainstorm that dropped 25 inches of water in 7 hours. Government data show heavy rainfalls have increased by nearly 30% in the southeast over the past 50 years.
Climate activist Bill McKibben noted that while the Fort Lauderdale event was a freak of nature, it was also utterly predictable.
As the planet warms, the atmosphere can hold more water, and he warns that we are entering a phase of steep rises in global temperatures as El Niño conditions return.
New research from the Lawrence Berkeley National Lab shows that by the end of the century, the biggest rain and snow days will be 20% to 30% wetter than they are today. Much of that increased precipitation will occur in winter.
But a warmer atmosphere also causes more evaporation. A study led by Nanjing University in China shows that climate change is making summer droughts faster and more furious.
So-called flash droughts, which come on suddenly, can kill large areas of crops, not only from lack of rain and snow, but also because the atmosphere gets so hot and dry, it sucks water right out of plants and soil.
The researchers found that flash droughts are occurring more often in nearly three-quarters of the world.
Swimming pools and lush landscapes, the lavish lifestyles of the wealthy require a lot of water, and according to a new study, they do so at the expense of the poor.
New research led by Uppsala University found high water use by the elite to irrigate gardens, wash cars, or fill pools are driving urban water crises around the globe, at least as much as climate change or population growth.
The study focused on Cape Town, South Africa, where many people live without taps and toilets and use their limited water for drinking and hygiene.
The researchers found that affluent households, which make up less than 14% of Cape Town's population, used more than half of the water consumed in the city, while lower-income groups, which account for nearly two-thirds of the city's residents, consumed just over one-quarter.
The authors say that low-income households are significantly more vulnerable to drought and water crises than the elite, who can afford price increases and find alternative water sources, such as digging wells.
The study said that more than 80 cities worldwide face similar water scarcity and equity issues, including London, Miami, and Mexico City.
They add that while solutions to urban water use have focused on raising prices and finding more supplies, more consideration should be given to reducing unsustainable consumption among elites. And finally, phytoplankton. The tiny ocean organisms are climate superstars for the amount of carbon dioxide they sequester from the atmosphere through photosynthesis.
To grow, all phytoplankton need is sunlight, CO2, and a few nutrients in the water, including nitrogen, phosphorus, and iron. Most iron in the ocean drifts from dust on land, but not much ends up in the Southern Ocean, so any of the element there needs to be recycled.
That task has largely been handled by a relationship between krill, tiny shrimp-like crustaceans, and baleen whales. Krill eat plankton and then are eaten by whales. When the whales poop, the iron in their feces is taken up by plankton, and the cycle continues.
But these two aren't the only players in this game. New research shows that shorebirds play a key role in iron recycling, and in particular, penguins punch above their weight.
Scientists in Spain used drone images to estimate the size of chinstrap penguin colonies in Antarctica, and then calculated how much iron their poop, also known as guano, contained.
The penguins also feast on krill and have been found to poop over 500 tons of iron back into the icy water each year. That might sound like a lot, but it's only half the amount from four decades ago, as the birds' numbers have plummeted due to climate change.
Less penguin guano affects phytoplankton growth, which in turn will sequester less carbon and be less able to keep the climate in check. That means chinstrap penguins will take it on the chin despite doing their utmost to keep ecosystems healthy.
That's it for This Week in Water. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
We now check in with KGNU's comment line and the listeners who share their thoughts about what they hear on KGNU.
Hi, this is Evan Ravitz. I, too, have greatly enjoyed John Lendorf's Kitchen Table Talk series. The real answer to why the Conference on World Affairs this year is entirely devoted to climate is to greenwash CU's horrific actions regarding fossil fuels. CU has $270 million invested in fossil fuels after many years of student protests of using their money to dig the climate hole deeper. CU in 2020 fired climate scientist Detlev Helmig, whose monitoring showed oil and gas drilling is responsible for about half of our severe ozone pollution. In 2005, CU fired Adrian Anderson, who taught how to investigate environmental crimes. The conference is a shadow of what it was when the new director and Boulder City Council member Bob Yates became involved about 7 years ago. The main funder of the conference, Jane Butcher, pulled out, and my friend Maura Clare, a 30-year CWA employee, was pressured to resign. Sources on request.
If you'd like to make a comment on something you heard on KGNU, you can leave a message at our listener comment line at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25. That's it for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host and producer, Shannon Young. Thanks to John Kellen, Steve Miller, Alyssa Palazzo, Alexis Kenyon, Jamie Sudler, Franny Halperin, and in-studio guests, Dr. Rob Anderson and Mary Pierce, for their contributions to today's program. Stay tuned for How on Earth. That's all still ahead after these headlines from the BBC.